He is the interim chief of IMPD. He has been hard at work studying, cramming, and we know he's going to do a better job at the prep and the tests he needs to do to take the word interim off his title of the chief of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police. He's Rick Hite, and he joins me live. Chief, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Let me first ask, y'all ready for the weekend?
We're ready for the weekend.
You ready for the weekend?
Exciting weekend. I just left an outstanding luncheon with a great speaker. George Taliaferro is a living legend in our times, and he talked about the history of Indiana and how important it is for young people not to be considered just student athletes, to be scholar athletes, and importance of education and being a well-rounded citizen. And How you? It's not where you start out in life, and how you end up, and how he had a rough up going during the time he played football, being the first African American to be actually drafted in the NFL, and all that went with that. But he talked, I believe, about leaving a legacy and how important it is to do that, and he rewarded young people at the end with trophies for being scholar athletes. So it's been a good experience so far, and a good kickoff for the weekend.
Are we looking at the same number of officers as were deployed for Expo? Is it going to be less? Because obviously you got a parade, and you got to turn right around after the parade ends and do traffic control for the game downtown.
What's remarkable about this department is that every year they've always assessed the previous year and debriefed and made a determination that wouldn't make sense. I think we have a good number of officers and reserves. We have the state police assisting us along with the sheriff's office and deploying our resources in appropriate places. We have a number of events and venues that will spread out this year, and we're going to make sure we cover all those venues and our obligations. But we're looking forward to people coming in spirit of peace and having a good time.
I know that one of the satellite events of this weekend is a rapper, Yo Gotti
is going to be at the
Where is he at? I've heard three or four different venues. Sometimes when he performs, there is trouble. Are y'all concerned about that?
Well, we've had a conversation over a month ago about that. We made some overtures and did some investigations and previous venues he's been in, we're ready. Mm-hmm. He will be at the Old National, and so will we.
Oh, he's at Old National.
Yes.
Oh, well, they don't play at Old National.
And neither do we.
Okay. How we doing in crime? I mean, some guy gets mugged on the Monon Trail, and we discovered the cameras aren't working.
Well, we had a conversation about how great things are going in terms of our interaction with community. It's been proved. I like to think that our crime rate is commensurate with that. Mm-hmm. Since my tenure here, we've seen a constant reduction. We had a 22% increase at the first of the year. We've reduced that overall. I like to think that we have a good understanding now of what's driving it and what's also and what's important to us is making sure we reach out to our citizens when they're in fact assaulted. And in this case, we have a senior who's riding the Monon Trail, as reported by the news, accosted by allegedly three juveniles. Our camera at that time in that location, and in speaking with Homeland Security, was not functioning. It is now functioning.
That is not – so those cameras are not – that's not IMPD's responsibility.
And directly, it's a portion of it because we have officers assigned Homeland Security, of course. It is a function of Homeland Security and emergency preparedness.
Okay.
And we are going to – we had some conversation with the chief, and then we're hoping that we capture the suspect relatively quickly with the help of the public. We thank those who stepped forward to help the senior. We reached out to him since that time. But I guarantee you this, we're concerned. We've had four robberies on, and we're concerned about that. And the scheme of things, that's not a lie. But any robbery, any assault, any of our citizens, I'm concerned about that.
In terms of, you're operating on what has been described as these zones.
Yes.
And, when I've talked to police officers, they don't like the idea. And citizens aren't naturally thrilled with the idea either. Is this something where these zones, once the new public safety director gets here at the end of the month, gets settled, where you and he will have a conversation as to how the man and the person power in IMPD is going to be deployed?
Absolutely. Well, of course, anytime you have a new administrator coming on board, you have to get him up to speed as to what systems are in place, how you measure out on crime, and all more importantly, is what's working.
Right.
I understand the zone concept may be new to
but
the public.
But you feel it's working.
Well, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of our preliminary numbers in 2000, early 2012, and now down to 3% in preliminary Part 1 crime says it is working. But what we have to recognize, this department does a tremendous job with the resources that we have. And in terms of numbers, we have a police department that's doing the work of 3,000. With 1,600 people at the helm. Mm-hmm. What we also have to recognize, Amos, is that when we look at this, we look into areas and communities which have been entrenched in violent crime in some cases for decades. And we're starting to dismantle some of those organizations. You heard recently with some indictments in some areas of community very quietly taking place. We're looking forward to more of that. But to get to your question, I think the idea is to make sure that we fully understand the community may not see the value of these zones we're putting the cops on the dots, but we also need additional resources to help sustain those areas. So when we plant a flag, when we take that community, when we take that particular area and eradicate the violent crime or crime in general, we need to make sure there's a sustainability plan of a police officer working that area in a beat fashion as they're accustomed to. But in critical times such as this, we have to stretch our resources to make sure we accomplish the goals we set for.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. The chief is here. You know, he really wants to hear from y'all. He don't need to hear from me. Let me go to, is it Anika on the line? Hi there.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
We're fine.
Quickly, my concern is the school zone speed limit around my son's school. Both of my sons go to Capital City Seventh-day Adventist School. The address is 2143 Boulevard Place. It's right there between 21st and Fall Creek. And we have been trying to get some of the parents and teachers, we have been trying to get a police presence in that area for quite some time now. I've called and talked to, I haven't actually talked to him. I've left messages for Lieutenant Patrick White, and I've been given a runaround for quite some time now. And my concern is these people come around this school zone doing at least 40 to 50 miles an hour. Now, there's a school zone right there on Michigan Road, the International School. And even though that's a school zone, I'm not taking anything away from that, but people know to slow down because there's cops down there. They will ticket you, but there's never any jeopardy of any of them children, those kids getting hit by a car. Unlike the school that my kids go to, they have to cross the street. People, you can literally hear their tires coming around that corner. And all I'm asking for is an officer to sit over there for at least 2 weeks just to watch and see how fast those people go through that school zone. And it's usually a lot of it's early in the morning and afternoon, really all day long. And I have to pull my kids back to keep from them, you know, from crossing the street. The people are coming through there so fast. It's really dangerous. And we're just asking for some help. They keep telling us at the office that you guys are short staffed. I understand that, but you know, I live on the north side of town. I see police officers sitting between Kessler and 52nd Street on Grandview to catch speeders. Now, if you guys can do that, surely to God, you guys can put somebody over there for the safety of our children.
Chief,
Chief,
you need to hire Anika because she's investigating.
Oh, well, she sounds like she's done half her homework for us. But it's a joint partnership. We'll reach out to the school system and
But hold on. Let me ask a couple questions. Sure. Anika, when you say the kids are crossing the street, are they crossing like at the McLean Place and Boulevard as Boulevard kind of circles to go across the bridge across Fall Creek?
It's not right there in McLean Place. When you come over the bridge,
right.
The school sits right across the street from that daycare center.
Absolutely.
That's also the hospital.
Right.
And then there's a little street. I'm not sure the name of that street.
I know. Yeah.
But we cross right there. Parents park on both sides of the street, depending on, you know, for their dropping off and picking up. And we have to cross that street. And these people are just flying through the school zone.
The other thing is, it sounds like there needs to be an official crossing guard, somebody, you know, with the vest on and the stop sign.
The thing about it is, right there at Fall Creek, there is a sign that says, you know, reduce, it's a warning sign that says reduce speed ahead, and then the actual speed limit sign is obscured by trees, and then the one coming off of 21st Street, when you're heading, I believe that's north on Boulevard, it used to be a time where the school zone sign was right behind the actual speed limit sign, but they've since switched them so that the school zone school limit sign is right in front of the actual regular speed limit sign.
All right, let me let the chief respond, because I get the feeling Lieutenant Patrick White gonna hear from somebody today.
It's a combined effort that was staying the school system in terms of.
But this is an independent school. This is not a.
I think we need to talk about what is the plan for that particular area.
Right.
For example, whether we use crossing guards or traffic control devices, or what makes sense just doing an assessment of that particular area. I don't particularly know the area totally, but I'm a good partner here, Officer Adams, who does. But I think we need to do a real assessment. Without knowing that information and having to physically look at it, make a determination what makes sense in terms of that, whether it be strict enforcement, whether it be deterrence through, again, traffic control device or strict enforcement.
I tell you what, Anik, I also want you to hold on, and if you would, off the air, give Chris, the gentleman you talked to when you first called me, give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day so the chief staff can follow up specifically with you, okay?
And also look into number of accidents and number of injuries. I mean,
they're going to run a thing, so hold on, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, 239-1310. We're also coming up, Chief, starting Monday with a number of school districts on the two-week hiatus. And so is it really getting to be a problem where it's confusing for motorists when a school zone is in operation and when a school zone isn't in operation?
Excellent point. And also, it's also important for us to know when the kids are out of school. So I think, communicating out, that both of those are equally important.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. Back to the phones. And Katie, hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a quick question for you, Mr. Chief of Police.
Yes, ma'am.
I am currently on probation. I have called for several weeks now asking for a permit to leave, a pass to leave. And when I spoke with the supervisor of probation today, they advised me that I should just go ahead and leave because it's due to a pregnancy. But I'm wondering, I have to ask you, would I be locked up or will my baby be taken if I leave the state and come back?
Well, you raise a good question. I mean, conditions of your probation is that you can't leave the state. What is your probation officer advising you?
He's only asking that they wait on a medical doctor to send paperwork back, but I've been waiting 2 months. I'm already 9 months pregnant, and I also had an injury last night.
Where are you waiting for a doctor? What are you waiting on a doctor to send you? Whose doctor?
The probation department told me that I have to wait on the doctor to send them a statement that they will take care of me at the hospital.
All right. Do you have a regular doctor?
I have a regular doctor in the state of Illinois.
But you're on probation here in Indiana?
Yes.
Okay. When your baby decides to come, what hospital are you going to?
Illinois, Ingalls.
We have great hospitals here.
Yeah, actually, I put out of your great hospitals here, so I'm having problems.
You're having problems getting a great hospital here?
Yeah.
Are you on
out the hospital?
Well, hold on. Are you on
social services?
Are you on Medicaid?
Yes, I'm on great benefits.
All right, and you had a problem with the hospital?
Yes, I did. They put me out the hospital last month.
For what?
Because I haven't had any prenatal care from here. Or anything like that. I'm not from here. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois.
Well, hold on. It is against the law. It is against the law for a hospital to put a patient out.
My blood pressure was 200 over 111. I was at Methodist Hospital. They put me out. I went and filed a complaint down at the head of the president's office. An advocate called me back and told me that I needed to go back. I tried to go back several times, and they still continue to put me at the hospital with no medical attention.
Have you been treated at any of the Marion County Health Department clinics?
Yes, I have a statement from Marion County Health Department saying that my fetus was first a tubal pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
and that it was needed medical attention. I need to go to ER. So I then called my probation department and told them what was going on, and they stated that they have to have a doctor to release me to let me go, but they don't advise me not to go. But they're saying, I'm wondering, am I going to get locked up if I go and get this medical treatment that I need?
Is the probation department, this is state probation?
Shelbyville, Indiana.
Oh, this is probation in Shelbyville?
Yes.
You live in Shelbyville?
No, sir. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Well, why are you talking to a probation officer in Shelbyville if you live here?
That's where my probation officer is.
All right. I tell you what I want you to do. I want you to hold on, and off the air, I want you to give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day. And I think the chief staff, someone from the chief staff will call you. And I think they also probably need to, you know, check. The police can find out some medical information that I can't under the HIPAA laws. Because something you're telling me is coming awful close to violating medical ethics and the law that governs hospitals and medical professionals. Okay. And you're 9 months, and babies due any day?
The baby should be here, but seeming that I didn't have any care, I won't have a water burst.
Any day. All right, Chief?
And also, well, we just want to make sure that doesn't happen. We want to reach out to you. But also, the social services contact, also, the social worker or some other name we can also reach out to because, yeah.
All right, so Katie, hold on and give Chris that information. Allow me to talk to Dee at 239-1310. Hi there. Dee?
Hi, Amos. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm calling regarding the construction signs that we have on our block. The construction signs are on Gateway, on the corner of Gateway and Moeller.
Mm-hmm.
And as people are turning in, I can't tell you how many numerous accidents have almost occurred and how many have already occurred. I've seen a young lady when she was coming around the roadblock sign to make a right-hand turn. And someone hit her, which made her hit the cable box that's outside for the neighborhood's cable. We had called 211 and told them that nobody on the block understood how come these roadblock signs are all the way down in the beginning of the block when the construction that's actually going on is like 4 or 5 blocks away from where these signs are. And we've been asking for someone to come and take a look at how much, you know, how much danger they're putting people in each and every day, and if they could either move the signs back or take them down, and no one is hearing us, and the neighborhood is kind of upset about these signs being up there. I can't tell you on the weekend, every time we go out there, these signs have been hit by something.
Ooh. And I know that area, that Moeller and Gateway, it curves around there. Oh, yeah, that's a mess.
Right, and when people are coming off of Moeller trying to turn into Gateway, and if you're trying to come around the sign, you're almost having a head-on accident.
All right, I tell you what, Dee, I want you to hold on, because Chief is writing many a note here.
Yeah, it's
he's writing more notes than he writes on his notes trying to study for the test.
I'm thinking DPW, I'm thinking traffic evaluation. Okay.
So hold on, Dee, and give Chris that information, would you, please, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is. Now, you know, you've been in law enforcement forever.
34 years.
And occasionally you're asked to write a letter of recommendation. Maybe it's a former officer that's trying to get into college. Maybe it's a recommendation on, you know, for something else. And you were asked to give a recommendation to our good friend Byron Alston. He had kind of made a little mistake, and you were trying to, you know, to kind of put in a good word for him, and it caused some consternation.
Well, I'm glad we had the opportunity to clear it up, because this is the first time anyone's ever asked me what the letter was all about. Actually, the letter was written on the behalf of an organization, and there are several in time that, based on my history lesson, having, you know, coming to Indiana from Maryland, there are several organizations that work with ex-offenders.
Right.
One of the reasons why I was brought here, because I had a couple of programs that were notable in terms of the outcomes and, you know, some notoriety from across the country of being successful working ex-offender gang members and things of that nature. So I was kind of hired because of that, you know, the reputation. But one of the groups that came that we worked with for the last several administrations, I understand, at least three of Monroe administrations, was the 10-Point Program, the 10-Point Coalition. And the program, it talks about reentry and restorative justice, was very interesting, because they were able to do things. I found it very interesting that they were able to reach out to people who were on probation,
right.
Those who had completed probation but had a unique way of preventing recidivism, and that they also had a unique way of preventing violent crime by utilizing those individuals. The letter of support was that because we are in a funding crisis in many ways in our community. They're in need of funding, they're in need of supports, and they were in need of also increasing the number of outreach workers. So we oftentimes, it's not uncommon. And I have to recognize that in these, not for me with all that goes along with that, but Philadelphia just, the administrations wrote letters for their city, and they received $1 million for ceasefire Chicago did the same thing in June.
Right.
But I understand that should have been a more comprehensive explanation given to the community as to come to as a result of my writing a letter as to the fact that you are endorsing the program,
okay,
and not the person. And what we're trying to do is show examples.
So you're endorsing the program the person worked for.
Exactly. In other words, showing examples of the good work that they're doing,
mm-hmm,
and the fact that we want them to continue. However, we don't have the resources, and they can use the letter to give to funding sources, the foundations, philanthropic organizations, et cetera, to continue the good works.
But also understand the letter was submitted to the court, but the court never read the letter from the bench, which would have automatically put it in the record. And there's some confusion whether the letter was ever even entered into the record, or even the judge, I don't believe, even took that into consideration in her deliberations.
There are those who would say that the decision was made long before the letter was written. There are, mm-hmm, those who would say that there were some compliance issues. They would say that the young man was in compliance in most of the areas, but some of the areas were woefully lacking. And the judge took that into consideration. But I have to hammer home the message that we have to have restorative justice. We have to recognize that some of our communities are entrenched with people who have recidivated a number of times, and we have to have a process to bring them back and in some cases make them whole. I am an advocate for making sure those organizations who have the wherewithal to work with those intensive probationaries. We do that. We allow people who do that work naturally to do that. These are ministers, people of the cloth, God-fearing men and women who work with this, again, these individuals. And we know, based on history, that you need to have a service plan for those returning back to our community from institutions.
239-1310 this afternoon's name is back to the phones. And Samantha, hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi, I have a question for him. How do you reconcile this Fountain Square situation when, you know, these young black youth are really getting treated like grown men? And, you know, it's not fair and it's not right, but y'all put all this on these black kids. But these white grown men jumping on these kids, hurting them, and then the black youth is the ones that's getting charged with the utmost stuff. That's not right.
Well, ma'am, let me say this to you, because it is an ongoing investigation and pending litigation. Let me say this to you, that there are issues in our communities, and this is one where we have young people in some cases acting out, whereby the fact is no longer delinquent behavior. It's now moved into criminal behavior, and they were and oftentimes we find our young people charged as adults. Now, what I will say this, there are issues on both sides of the equation, both white and black and Latino. And what we want to do is get to the bottom of it. Our idea is not to demonize our young people, but enough is enough when it comes to violent crime among young people in our communities. And we're going to call it out for whatever it is, and we'll have an opportunity to share in court our message to the community that we are concerned about young people. We have programs to deal with young people in terms of positive outcomes. But when you reach into the area of violent crime, and we have been asked to do this in a number of communities to actually identify those persons, which we will, and call it out for what it is, that's what we have to do.
Chief, one of the questions that has come up is if there are juvenile suspects and they're charged as juveniles, mm-hmm, and there's some concern that perhaps officers are questioning juveniles without their parents being present, which is on their right under the juvenile part of the law. You know, if you find out that, you know, your men and women are interrogating juveniles in the juvenile center or outside and their parents not there, that ain't part of the rules of the game.
Absolutely. But I think we also have to be very careful, Amos. That's a thin line, because when we charge them as adults versus we charge them as juveniles. But I think
But you just raised a point. If a juvenile is charged as an adult, then the adult rules apply and only the attorney can be present, not the parent.
There you go. You got it. That's my most succinct explanation I've ever heard. That's
Right. It took a juvenile judge to hit there me to that go. Last night over at the college fair. Somebody pulled my coat and I actually asked him,
I have to be very clear about this.
Yeah.
Our job is to arrest.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the prosecutors to charge. And sometimes they think we're judge, jury, and executioner. I get that. But in this state, it's the prosecutor that makes the determination what charge will be placed against those juveniles. And it's not uncommon. And I have to say this, that sometimes the cases are charged and were then remanded back to the juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think it's important that we have to take them into custody to unravel what it is we're having in terms of havoc in our community. But at the same time, we have to pass this on to additional eyes for a final outcome.
All right, we got about 3 to 5 minutes left, and we need to kind of get everybody, we want to get you through, so I ask you keep your question to the point, but very short. Daryl, you got about a minute.
Yes, how you doing, Chief? Welcome to our fine city.
Thank you, sir.
What I'm trying to do is start a security company and give an ex-fender try to come to work for my company. What I need to know in the process is how did it work when you come to you guys to do it? Because I've been trying some time to try to get my licenses and stuff.
Well, it's not really our decision. It's a state licensure issue, but I would gladly point you in the right direction. We get your information offline because I think it's important that we give you the right information. We definitely need additional persons out there helping us keep our city safe.
All right.
And then not only that, we will also be enforcing the curfew also as my company comes to existence.
Well, we definitely need to talk offline about that.
So, a private security company cannot enforce curfew?
Yes, we're going to talk about what that really in terms of liability issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, y'all need to sit out because said.
Well, especially our sites we work, especially the sites we're working on.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right. Appreciate it. Let me go to Reverend Ajabu. You got about a minute, Reverend.
Yeah, Chief Hyde, Amos, thanks for taking my call. And I'm calling also concerning the situation out there on the south side. It looks like there's almost a mini race war going on out there, and you got adult white men attacking young black boys. And it looks like that the adult white men are getting OR'd out and not getting charged, getting let go, whereas that the young black boys are being tied over into adult court and being treated as adults when in actuality they're just defending themselves. And even one time a mother came out to stop a man from beating on her child and the police arrested her. And Chief Hyde, I heard you. I know that the charging and stuff is going on the prosecutor's side, but I would look for the police to be a more sensitive in their arresting and charging the youngsters or arresting the youngsters and treating them as whereas that they're letting those adults go. And I looked at all of the probable cause affidavits and looked at the charging information, and I think that there is a piling on that's going on here to make a situation appear to be what it isn't. So I'll call you.
I was going to say, any other time we've always had an opportunity to talk to one another, and I'm saying this, we're looking for is evidence and information. And we have no angst in this situation. We want justice to be prevailed, but we also have to have people come forth and tell us the truth, and not manufacture, but tell us the exact truth. Because we, as in Denny Street, we identified what the threat was. We found out who the suspect was, and he was taken into custody. We're not going to have a race war. We're not going to allow it to get to that point because justice is going to prevail.
All right, Keith will have the last word with Chief Hyde. Hi, Keith. Keith? Keith going once. Come on, Keith. You got less than a minute.
Oh, I wanted to ask the chief of police, is it reiterated to his officers that, I mean, it seems that they're always speeding around and not obeying traffic signals, and then whenever they make a traffic stop, if there's four or five of them, their cars is always running, and we're talking about budget shortfalls and things, is it drove home to his officers when they're out on the street to, you know, obey some of the same rules that I can be ticketed for?
Well, sir, I'll tell you this much. We, by and large, most of our officers do obey the rules, but occasionally there are some challenges relative to our policy. So if you get the tag number of the vehicle, you let us know. We'll look into it. And here's what I will tell you. I have an inspections person, a compliance officer, Major Perkins, whose specialty is looking into systems and identifying officers who need some additional training, if not direction.
So he's looking for the cars with the motor running and everybody's, you know.
We find a violation, we want to look into it because proper public perception is important to us.
All right. And again, obey the traffic laws tomorrow on your way to the parade. The parade starts at 10. And they start on time because it's going to be live on Channel 8. But it's going to be sunny tomorrow. Sunny. And we'll be in the parade. I'm getting my waddle ready. So I'm gonna try to at least waddle, you know, a block down on the parade, and then AM 1310 The Light will be down at Fall Fest, the tailgate at St. John's Church. What better place for The Light to be at the tailgate at Fall Fest, but at a church? At church at St. John's Church at the corner of Georgia Street and Capitol. And the game starts at 2:30, not 4 o'clock, not 5 o'clock. 2:30, because after the game is over, the police want to go home to their families. All right. We will see you at the game. And then on Monday, our ninth annual, the program that now lawyers want to listen to. Every lawyer in town is going to be listening to our evaluation show of what was good about the Classic, what was not so good, how can it be improved, and if you didn't go, why didn't you go? What would get you to go to the Classic? And we'll also find out how well the police did, how well the parade did, all the whole ball of wax. That's on Monday's show. I'm Amos Brown. We'll see you in the parade tomorrow. We might even see you floating around Lucas Oil Stadium during the game between South Carolina State and North Carolina Central Universities. And then we'll be live here at 1:00.